News Talk 1360, WCHL, and UNC Family Medicine present Here's to Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page. Here's to Your Health, providing practical health-related news and information for our listeners. Dr. Goldstein and Dr. Page are both actively involved in patient care at UNC Family Medicine. Now, here's to your health.
Welcome to UNC Family Medicine's Here's to Your Health, supported by UNC Healthcare. I'm Dr. Adam Goldstein.
And I'm Dr. Christy Page.
And on our show today, we're going to be talking about healthcare reform with Adam Searing from the North Carolina
Here's to Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page on News Talk 1360 WCHL, sponsored by UNC Family Medicine. And now, more of Here's to Your Health.
Welcome back to UNC Family Medicine's Here's to Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page. Our featured topic today is healthcare reform. And I would say, once again, because Christy and I have really tried over the last year to bring guests to our show that really have unique perspectives to share with our listeners, and I don't know of anything more important and more timely right now than this issue, which really is affecting, I think, virtually every person in our state and every person in the United States.
I agree with you, Adam. And we're fortunate to have with us today Adam Searing from the North Carolina Justice Center. He joined the Justice Center as director of the North Carolina Health Access Coalition in 1997. The coalition advocates both for more comprehensive and effective public health care programs and on behalf of average consumers in the private market. He grew up in Chapel Hill, a true Tar Heel, and received his graduate degrees in law and public health here from the University of North Carolina in 1994. He has received awards and recognition for his work from the North Carolina Public Health Association, the North Carolina Primary Health Care Association, and regional and state newspapers, among others. So we are glad to have you with us today.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
Adam, let me just ask you a question as we start. You know, how did you, as a lawyer, get to be to the place where you are, where I consider you as one of the leading advocates for healthcare reform in our state, and certainly recognized that way across the state?
Well, there's no question that the main reason is I grew up in Chapel Hill. I think the reason I've always been interested in the philosophy behind healthcare, and I became a lawyer, and I was over here at the public health school, and I saw that there were these huge inequities in the way we set up our health system. You had very poor people who could get Medicaid, some of whom could get coverage, and then you had people who are of moderate or better means and could buy coverage through their employers, but a lot of people in small businesses couldn't get it, and that just didn't seem right.
So you really started becoming immersed in the issues involving healthcare, but you had some unique perspectives as a lawyer rather than necessarily as a clinician.
Sure. I mean, I think as an attorney, I got to see a lot of the policy side of things, how we set up the system, how we organize our health system. And you combine that with, I think my family has a long background in kind of doing social justice issues, and I think those two things combine to make me very interested in it.
So when we think about the number of people in our state that are uninsured, I believe it's somewhere in the neighborhood of 1.5 million uninsured people in North Carolina. What are we really talking about? Like, what sort of problems and health problems are worse in the people who don't have access to care?
Well, we know people who don't have health insurance only get about 40% of the health services that someone with health insurance has. They also have a higher risk of disease, a higher risk of chronic illness, and a higher risk of dying. So we know that. That's just a fact. The people who don't have health insurance in North Carolina, most of them are either working or part of a family that is working, usually in a small business. And we've been all around the state this summer talking to many people. We've met a lot of people in small businesses who can't afford coverage. Or there's somebody who has some sort of chronic condition and they're not able to pay the high premiums that health insurance companies ask them to pay. So there's a whole variety of people. Usually they're either going to be that chronic condition or working in a small business, or they're going to be low to moderate income, not making enough to buy coverage, but not so poor that they're going to qualify for Medicaid, which, by the way, only families and specific sets of people qualify for.
Well, I think in the past there was a perception, and you've already addressed it, that the uninsured were people who were either illegal aliens in the state or
also known as undocumented
or unemployed. And you've addressed right away that the great majority are people who are working. And to what extent have you had to really educate, and to what extent is the public educated in North Carolina about the kinds of issues that you're talking about?
Well, I think for a while people had that perception, but the reality, as more people have lost their jobs in North Carolina, as more of our companies have left to go to Mexico, as more of our companies have found health insurance too expensive to give to their workers, to provide for their workers, people realize the reality of the situation. And this summer, we did, as part of our travels around the state and town hall meetings, we actually invited small business people, owners, and workers to come to roundtable dinners in multiple cities across the state. And we sat down and talked with them about what their experiences were. And it was very eye-opening for us. We found the owners would say, look, I want to offer health insurance to my employees, but my costs have gone up 30% just in the last 2 years. I cannot do that anymore. And I think the reality caught up with the perception. Suddenly people realized that health insurance was on a very shaky foundation in North Carolina.
That's great. So you went and listened to a lot of people across the whole state to hear about what are the real issues?
Sure. We probably were either the major speaker or organized probably 30 town hall meetings. We did, I forget how many of these small business roundtables where we would try to do more intimate. We'd have 20 or 30 people. At some of our big town halls, we'd have as many, especially when we were doing it with a congressman, we would have, there'd be 1,000 people there. We had a lot of great conversation when we'd have like 50 people and you could really talk about it. And I was very encouraged. Not everybody agreed with us, but when you didn't have the shouting and screaming, people were very thoughtful and wanted to change and were wanting to figure out what the best way to do that was.
And when you say not everyone agree with you, what are the sorts of things that you are articulating as essential, and what are the things that some don't agree with?
Well, I think you had – when I say not everyone agree with us, we had two kinds of opposition. The first one were people who you're never going to convince. They're just there to shout and scream and say, we don't want
convince that
we need change in healthcare. Just leave everything the same. You know, we don't care if the premiums are going up 30% a year. We don't want to hear about it. So those people I don't think you can call. And they were in the very small minority. I think there were a lot of people who were worried, well, how is this going to work? Are you going to take my insurance away? I have insurance through my company right now. It's expensive, but I don't want to lose it. How is that? How is that going to be affected? Or with the small business folks, it's so complicated to look through all these plans to figure out which one's for me. Not only are prices going up, but the complexity is crazy. How's reform going to affect my ability to buy coverage?
Or I can't afford coverage, and am I going to be forced to now?
Right. Yeah, people are worried, am I going to be forced to? What are the penalties if I don't? And not understanding that most small businesses would be exempt or, that plans would be more affordable. So, there were a lot of discussion out there. But I was struck by, in our travels, how people really were committed to working together for change. And I think you see this in the latest Elon University poll that just came out last week. 75% of North Carolinians said, we definitely think we need health reform. And over 50%, I think it was 53%, said we would like a public option health plan as part of that reform.
Really?
So enormous.
In North Carolina.
Support. In North
That's
Carolina.
Impressive.
It is amazing. In fact, if North Carolinians would want the government to pay for all health services and pay for it by collecting more taxes, and you had 40-some percent of North Carolinians saying that.
That's surprising.
So very, very surprising numbers. I think shows people are fed up with the way the system is now and are ready for change.
Well, it sounds like that people are ready for change, and I know we're going to talk in a little bit more about this opportunity, and the House of Representatives just recently really passed. I mean, and I found myself staying up at night watching CNN at, you know, 11:30 at night and seeing that something incredibly historic had happened. Were you shocked? Were you said – or was this like, I knew it was going to happen?
No. I've been doing this for 12 years. It's been 12 long years. I was very, very surprised that it finally did. We've been working very, very hard to try and get folks in North Carolina behind it. So I was very happy. I was very disappointed and kind of embarrassed that we were one of the states that had no other state had more Democratic representatives voting against the health care plan than we did. We had three who voted against it. But we need to change that in the final bill.
Well, we're going to need to take a short break. And when we come back, we can maybe pick up on what's the still prospects, what still needs to be done, what's going to happen, and what happens if and when something does pass, which it appears like something is going to eventually pass. What will really happen to cost and access to care in North Carolina? We're talking with Adam Searing from the North Carolina Justice Center about health reform and your health. We'll be right back with UNC Family Medicine's Here's to Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page.
Here's to Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page on News Talk 1360 WCHL, sponsored by UNC Family Medicine. And now, more of Here's to Your Health.
Welcome back. You're listening to UNC Family Medicine's Here's to Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page. We've been talking with Adam Searing from the North Carolina Justice Center about health care reform. And we've had a rich discussion about really your efforts, Adam, in going around to hear from North Carolinians about our desire. And I'm surprised to hear that such a large percentage of our citizens are really really supportive of some sort of health care reform. And we wanted to ask the question with this historic bill and this some preliminary suggestions that some sort of health care reform will pass. What will that look like? How will that really impact North Carolinians?
I think that's a great question. And first of all, I don't think that bill would have passed if it wasn't for the hard work of a lot of representatives, including our own Representative David Price here, along with Representative Brad Miller, Representative Bob Etheridge, Representative Mel Watt, and Representative G.K. Butterfield, all who were North Carolina Democrats who voted for the legislation. They came under a lot of pressure not to vote for it, and we're very glad they did.
And I take it the Republican congressional candidates in North Carolina did not support it.
No. There was only one single Republican in the entire country who supported the bill, and he was down in Louisiana, and he was studying to be a Jesuit priest and thought that this was a good thing for his constituents, largely poor.
Okay.
What will reform look like if some version of close to the House bill passes, which I think will be changed a lot when the Senate gets through with it and it comes back.
So you're sort of forecasting the future.
Yeah, we're forecasting
the crystal ball,
right? But I think the basics are there. One, we will have a broad safety net for the very poorest people. Right now, we exclude people from health insurance who are single adults. No matter how poor they get, they cannot get on the state Medicaid program. They can be completely destitute, and they're not able to qualify.
So if we have a 1.5 million uninsured in North Carolina, what would that number go down to under the most optimistic scenario?
Well, it's 96% people will be covered under when the House bill is fully implemented. So we're talking a few hundred thousand who would be left out of the final plan.
So over a million North Carolinians might have health insurance who really don't have it right now?
Sure. Over a million.
Wow.
And then I think just as
it's
important.
It's remarkable.
It is remarkable. And just as important is that the people who do have health insurance now would have the security of knowing that they would not lose coverage if they lost their job or that the health plan that their employer costs went up too much.
And also if they have any pre-existing condition. I mean, it seems like to me that's a no-brainer. I don't understand why that just wasn't passed 10 years ago.
So wrong.
8 years ago, 6 years ago. And now, why don't you just pass those things and then get on to all and the things we can agree on completely?
Right. Well, I think everyone agrees on that one. We met many people when we were going around the state who said, I've had a diagnosis of breast cancer. I went to Blue Cross to try and get health insurance. They're the only place to go. They have 96.8% of the market in North Carolina. And they said my premium would be $2,500 a month.
Oh, my goodness.
Crazy. So I think we would see people get covered. We'd see small businesses. They would get subsidies to be able to afford coverage. Individuals would get subsidies up to families making about $88,000 a year. That subsidy, as you get closer to that mark, would go down significantly. The idea is that everybody needs to pay a significant portion of the premium, healthcare premium.
And what about the cost? Because I think this is the piece that I'm beginning to think that we are on the right track, but I'm not sure we've gotten it, that these efforts are going to really somehow rein in the cost of care, because we really are bringing a lot more people under the umbrella. But the research keeps moving ahead and the technology keeps moving ahead. Mm-hmm. And the only way I see them really reducing costs is by cutting Medicaid and Medicare significantly. And I think that's going to have this ripple effect for access.
Well, let's look at what the Congressional Budget Office said the overall cost of this health care bill would be. The House bill, they said, would actually cut the U.S. budget deficit by $103 billion over the next 10 years. So all the costs that are incurred in the bill are offset by either new revenues or cost savings, for instance, in Medicare, which is one of the major places they get cost savings. Now, I agree that we face a continuing battle on getting our healthcare costs under control, but this bill makes major strides to moving us in that direction. It makes major strides in Medicare, testing out doctors differently so we can start to get costs under control there, testing out using more electronic medical records, testing out different methods of how we pay private insurers. We actually pay private insurers in Medicare who are offering benefits 14% more than we do.
So this is much more fundamental than simply increasing access to people. This is really trying to fundamentally change the very way healthcare is practiced in this country.
Well, I think it is a fundamental change because it is unsustainable. We are unsustainable the way we are right now. I mean, if we do nothing, Medicare starts to run out of money in about 9 years. If we do nothing, the small businesses I talked to who said their 30% premium increases every 2 years, they see those again and again and again. We cannot afford to do nothing. We have got to start to get costs under control. This bill starts to make that leap.
Well, that is very exciting. What about the concern that the government, quote unquote, is going to influence doctors to hold their hands so that they can't, or tie their hands so that we can't, get a particular needed test or some surgery for a patient that we need? I think a lot of patients are concerned that things are going to be controlled not by their primary care doctor, but by the quote-unquote government. How do you respond to those fears about change?
Right. I think that's a legitimate fear. Nothing in this bill would get between people and their doctor. I think the way that we're talking about controlling costs is giving doctors more information so that they can provide better quality care to their patients, not provide less care, but provide more efficient and effective care. And we know we can do that. I mean, look at the iPod, for instance. Two or three years ago, it cost, $600, and it did half the things it does now. Today, it costs $200, and it does 10 times as much. So we just need to apply that kind of innovation to healthcare. We know there are places in the country that can do it. For instance, there's a town, I think it's in Michigan, which has had 300,000 people in the town. They converted their whole health system to electronic records, and they found out that they were doing 50,000 CAT scans a year on these 360,000 people. Absolutely crazy. You guys are doctors. No, that's
wow.
Crazy. I mean, a CAT scan has all sorts
of
radiation.
A lot of radiation,
yeah. It's
yeah.
like 500 x-rays. So they
a lot of money going in someone's pocket,
a lot of money
too.
Going in someone's pocket. They publicized what was happening, talked to everybody about it, and the doctors were shocked. Everyone was shocked. And the next year, they reduced that number of CAT scans to I think it was like less than 10,000. So, They save money. They improve care. We can do it.
Well, I want to give you some authority that you've never had before, because we have about 2 minutes, and you are now you're a genie, and you get three wishes, and three ways to influence the healthcare legislation as it comes to the Senate and conference committee. What are your three wishes?
My three wishes: one, that premiums are truly affordable for all Americans. The House bill has a really affordable premium. Some of the Senate bills, premiums could be two or three times as much. We want – if we're going to ask people to buy health insurance, they've got to be able to pay a premium they can afford. That's number one. Number two is, here in North Carolina, we desperately need some competition for our North Carolina Blue Cross, Blue Shield. They control 96.8% of the individual market. They're spending gobs of our money on marketing campaigns to defeat this bill. They need some competition. people need a choice. And third, I would really like to join you in thinking about how we can get a handle on health costs by helping our doctors do some of these innovative things that I was talking about. If we can put those three things in the bill, those would be my three wishes, and I want it to be signed before the end of the year, but I don't know if I'm going to get that.
Well, we certainly appreciate the work that you're doing to really advocate for the people of North Carolina in all of this.
Well, thank you for taking care of the people of North Carolina.
And I think the real challenge is this innovation question, because innovation in the past has been concomitant a lot of times with increased cost. And we have technologies. We associate innovation with technology. And I think perhaps now finding – and I like your analogy with lowering the cost but doubling the product. And maybe we need to think about innovation that way. Doubling the patient satisfaction would be the corollary.
Sure. I think we can do it. We have the technology. We have the know-how to do it in America.
Well, that's going to, I think, have to be a bookmark on our conversation. But we've been talking with Adam Searing of the North Carolina Justice Center. And thank you very much for laying out to us some challenges and some vision and some hope. Thank you for the work that you've been doing.
Oh, thank you.